Chapter 18. Flensed Bone. It had taken several grueling minutes to pull the broken blade from his body. Hephaestus did not consider himself an apothecary, and he doubted Venatio would approve of his crude methods, but they had proven effective. The hold, now sealed, still reeked of burnt flesh. He had opted for cauterization over sutures. The pain had been considerable, but he, like his brothers, had been made for such discomforts. It was as commonplace as breathing for one of his kind. His other task was considerably more delicate, taking hours, and here he had exercised a surgeon's care. The upper half of the dead body he had cut in two lay on the bench, the tool swept away to make room for it. Phosphor lamps had been clamped to guide rails immediately above the remains, and lit the grim scene with brilliant light. Hephaestus leaned over the corpse, determined to uncover its secrets. He found the skull had suffered a deep fracture that had partially collapsed the left temple. This, Hephaestus reflected, as he considered the flensed bone, still red from where he had peeled back the face, was curious. It meant two things. Firstly, that this initial attack against the native had been stronger than he had intended. Regulating impact and potential damage was difficult for an Adeptus Astartes, when his intent was to subdue, not kill. So often, the calculation need not be made. In this instance, the blow that had seen the swordsman collide with the hold's interior wall had been significant. This led to the second thing. The injury that the man had sustained to his left temple would almost certainly have killed him. In the face of these facts, a startling question presented itself.
How did you return from your mortis state?
He had witnessed greenskins fight on long past the point where they should be dead, often absent limbs or even, in some rare cases, heads. Cybernetic organisms such as combat servitors or mechanicus scutari could maintain some fighting efficacy after suffering injuries that should rightly have killed them. But this man, to every available piece of evidence, was mortal. He supposedly possessed none of the greenskin's resilience, nor the endurance of the part man, part machine. And yet, here they were. Not only had motor function returned and a limited, albeit feral, cognition, the man had also manifested significantly increased strength. Certain adrenal conditions could explain the latter, but only to a degree. Further analysis was needed. The scalpel blades attached to Hephaestus's exposed mechadendrites twitched. They slid back into their sheaths as a diamond-edged saw started up. The teeth went from gentle burring to a falsetto whine as they bit into Ruddy's skull bone. With a surgeon's exactness, Hephaestus slowly cut a perfectly rectangular hatch in the crown of the skull, which he then removed to expose the cranial vault. The matter inside looked ordinary enough, no sign of abnormal swelling or mechanized inputs of any kind. He further intensified the light, combining the improved illumination with the scrutinizing magnification of his bionic eye. Only then, between the irregular folds of the cerebral cortex, was he able to see what he could only describe as minuscule boreholes that appeared to tunnel down into the thalamus, hypothalamus, hippocampus, and amygdala. Cutting through the cerebellum with a fresh scalpel blade revealed tiny bore tracks. He went deeper, severing an entire cross-section of the brain pan. He was about to dissect further when something stirred in the dead meat and burrowed upwards into the light.
Omnissiah,
he gasped. It was insectile, metallic, its leaf-shaped carapace glazed in oily pink, and it moved, fast. He pinned it to the bone as it scuttled across the skull, apparently seeking fresh matter to infest. The tiny carapace cracked against the scalpel, briefly revealing the minuscule workings of a machine before it dissolved in a crackling flare of light. It wasn't alone. The emergence of one led to a swarm of the creatures, flowing like mercury from the cavities in the brain. Hephaestus reached for his tools, his fingers closing around the grip of a hand flamer. He knew what this was, what its presence meant. He burned everything, every scrap of flesh, hair and cloth, until there was nothing left but ash. He had to warn the others, and be damned what the natives made of the Thunderhawk. The ones he had fought earlier had left a trail that he could track with the ship's instruments. He gambled on it leading him to Sicarius. Sitting in the cockpit again, Hephaestus murmured the rites of function, imploring the gunship's machine spirit to ignition. A low whir sounded through the airframe, growing to a drone as the turbofans started up. A boost of thrust let out a roar, and the ship began to vibrate, eager to be aloft once more.
"Fly swift," said Hephaestus, easing the throttle and lurching it into the sky. An old enemy had returned,
one they had buried years ago.